KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. What if I told you that the lefty political movement against climate change is broken? That activists have become more like zealots, closed off to skepticism, and they've accomplished nothing. That is the view of University of Washington Atmospheric Sciences Professor Cliff Mass. Mass knows that climate change is real, and he's worried. But he also thinks environmental activists and media are raising a lot of false flags.
They're hyping and exaggerating current weather events. For instance, it was claimed that the cold waves in the eastern United States a few years ago was due to global warming. That's an example. There are other examples claiming that the oysters are dying here in Washington State because of CO2 in the atmosphere. I could list a dozen of these.
The Seattle Times ran a story about a beloved pine tree dying because of essentially climate change.
That's right. That's another one. That one pine tree died because of climate change, and it was really unsupportable. There were things in that article that were patently not true. So I have been calling people on some of these excessive claims.
What is the worst thing about excessive claims? What about, it's the atmosphere. It's huge and complex, and we don't know everything. But, hey, this is our only planet so far. Let's be better safe than sorry.
Well, I think the first thing is scientists have to tell the truth. Society needs to have the truth. If you're going to plan for global warming, and there's a certain amount of global warming that's going to happen, you have to know the accurate numbers. How much will we warm? How much will the snowpack change? If we're going to change our reservoirs or work on our rivers or do whatever we need to do, society can't work on exaggerated claims or things that are just unphysical.
We can't specifically predict those things that you're saying, right? We don't know how much to the inch this and that's going to happen. That's why I ask about the better safe than sorry.
Well, what we can do is provide information about uncertainty. So there are some things that we're certain about. There's some things we're not certain about. For instance, we are quite certain that increasing CO2 will cause the Arctic ice sheets to melt. And that's the first sign. And in fact, we're seeing that already. But what we're less sure about is whether some precipitation extreme in one part of the country is due to global warming. So there are some things we're very, very sure about. But there are other things that we believe there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think it's very important to communicate that uncertainty to the population and to decision makers.
Why is it so important to communicate the uncertainty? I want to focus on the certainty, which, as you said, you're no denier. Where the Arctic ice is melting and we have trouble. Why not focus on that?
Well, the uncertainty is a very important thing that I'm trying to figure out, and a lot of scientists like myself are. Some of our early climate simulations have been very simplistic. We would do this one or two simulations in the future and say, that's reality. But that's not a very good approach. We need to do many runs. We have to try to get an idea of the probabilities of various outcomes, not to say, this is the worst case or whatever.
Do I have it right that you argue that global warming might be a short-term benefit to poor people?
That's right. I actually did an analysis of this. Some people are claiming that in Washington State that poor people are preferentially hurt by global warming. And I did a blog about this, analyzing the situation, and found that it was basically just the opposite, that there's really no evidence that poor people will preferentially suffer from global warming in our state.
And why is that?
Well, I'll give you an example. The number one killer of people in our state that is weather-related is black ice on the roadways. That's by far, nothing is killing and injuring our people more weather-wise. Well, it turns out that poor people preferentially suffer from these black ice accidents. They have cars that don't have as good of tires, or they don't have anti-lock brakes, or they drive a lot more mileage early in the morning. And so if you have global warming, you'll have less ice and snow. I can go through other examples. For instance, air pollution. That's a big issue with wood-burning smoke, terribly toxic. Well, there's a lot of poor people who live in valleys and rural areas. Well, if the temperature warms, you won't need to burn as much wood to get your heat, and so there'll be less toxics in the air. That's better for poor people. So I can go over one thing after the other, and there's really no evidence that poorer people will suffer preferentially from global warming here in Washington State. Now, that may be not true some other places.
Yeah, this is what I want to talk about. Right. It's a matter of emphasis. So I take you to be correct about the effects on driving on black ice. But when we're talking about poor people who are vulnerable to more floods and droughts and storms and habitat change, isn't that the bigger picture that's more worth focusing on?
Well, we have to focus what we're talking about. That blog was put in the context of I-732, the carbon tax initiative for Washington State. And this was an issue about whether we will tax ourselves in Washington State and then return the money in a revenue-neutral way. There were people who were fighting Initiative 732, the carbon tax, saying that's it's wrong because we have to get more money to poor people in our state because they would preferentially suffer.
Now we're getting into the politics of that carbon tax proposal. But speaking of politics, who do you think is more constructive and open-minded about climate change right now, Seattle area and Washington State, Democrats or Republicans in our state?
Well, that's really, it's really hard to say. On one hand, we have the environmental left who are concerned about climate change, but they're really not willing to do anything about it in a substantive way. They have integrated climate change with other things like what they call it climate justice and dealing with labor issues and dealing with poverty. So they have entrained climate change into a whole list of their interests and targets. Okay, and that has made it toxic for the Republicans to join them in working on this issue. On the other hand, if you do talk to moderate Republicans, and I have done that, a lot of them understand climate change is a serious issue. And so I think there is hope that we can create a middle group that are willing to take practical steps to deal with climate change.
We're talking with University of Washington Atmospheric Science Professor Cliff Mass. And Cliff, you're not doing your research privately. You're also going on the air like right now and you're blogging. And when you emphasize what we don't know, which is a lot, about climate change, could it be that you have the effect of demotivating people? Because, hey, if a scientist is saying we don't know how bad this is, I don't have to worry about it. That could be a conscious or even unconscious reaction to what you're saying. Do you worry about that?
I think it's just the opposite, strangely enough. There's a lot of people that sense that there's a lot of hype and exaggeration going on. When they hear someone that is talking in a more moderated, fact-based way, they tend to listen more. This is particularly true of people in the middle, including people on the Republican and more conservative side of the spectrum. The fact I've been talking very honestly about what we do and don't know has allowed me to get places that people on the environmental left have not been able to.
Meanwhile, how are you being received among Seattle Democrats or socialists or progressives?
Well, some people are very accepting of it, are very positive, but I have to admit there are some people on the environmental left who are very unhappy with me. And I get some pretty nasty comments on my blog and other locations. Recently, I had a debate with someone in The Stranger. A reporter from The Stranger was writing headlines that I lost my mind, I was crazy, that I was dangerous. And that's because I was talking about things like I'm talking about here, the fact there is uncertainties that we have to get a handle on.
Okay, so someone listening to you right now, Cliff, what should they do about climate change? Because you're not saying be inactive. What do you want people to do?
No, in fact, I want people to be much more active than the environmental lefters are pushing them for. Number one thing is we have to first do the research, supporting in places like the University of Washington and other places to understand what's going to happen. So that's very important.
Pay tax dollars for research.
Yeah, research or give contributions, whatever. I think research is absolutely crucial. We have to maintain that to understand what's going to happen. Then people need to do what is critical to make us go forward, and that is to help support new energy technologies and energy conservation technologies. Right now, the United States is only a small part of the problem. Right now, China is producing twice the amount of carbon that it's putting in the atmosphere than we are. India is growing rapidly. Other countries are as well. And so the only way out of this problem is going to be technical. very few people are willing to sacrifice, financially sacrifice in any real way. In fact, if you look at there's various questionnaires, what people care about in terms of major issues, climate change is like number 10 down on the list. There was a recent study that found that most people are not willing to spend as much as $10 a month to do something about climate change.
But again, isn't that all the more reason to sound the alarm bell and not emphasize how far off and uncertain the damage will be?
Well, I mean, my research, and I've talked about on the blog, that by the end of the century, it's going to be warmer here. There'll be less snowpack. The precipitation will be heavier. So I'm pushing that kind of stuff. But what I'm not telling people is that every major storm or every tree that's dying in the Arboretum is due to global warming. Now, let me tell you something. There's a real danger to exaggeration. And the snowpack issue is one that proves the point. It wasn't that many years ago that Greg Nickels, our mayor, was talking about snowpack disappearing. There was one bad snowpack year, and he was saying, you know, that's it. It's climate change. Our snowpack's down by 50%. It's not coming back. He did an editorial in the Seattle Times. Well, unfortunately for him, the snowpack did come back. And so we've had some pretty good snowpack years. And in fact, if you look at the trend over the last 30 years, in fact, the snowpack's not going anywhere.
But what if people read that Greg Nickels editorial and said, oh my God, it's my responsibility to get on the bus and get out of my single occupancy car. And in the years since, they've realized, hey, the bus isn't so bad. You know, what if people will act based on fear, even if you think the fear is exaggerated?
Well, this is crying wolf. So then 5 years from now, the snowpack's back and they say, these people lied to me. I did all these actions. And then you would be much less likely to listen to the forecast 20, 30 years from now. Now, we have to tell people the truth. This business about trying to panic people and lie to them, this is not the way to do business. It ruins scientific credibility. Society can't plan on lies. It just is not the way to act. I think society and our politicians and decision makers need to know the best truth that we can give them.
That is Cliff Mass, a professor of atmospheric sciences at the University of Washington. You may have heard him mentioned debating a Stranger reporter recently. That was Charles Mudede, and we are tweeting out a link to that debate right now at KUOW.